From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Well, first of all, congratulations to Super Bowl champs, the Denver Broncos, defeating the Carolina Panthers 24-10. Just amazing. You know, we get to Denver every month to tape our Beyond Belief television programs. When we get there at the end of the month, they're going to go wild. They really do. They love to stab, rib it in a little bit anyway. And did you see Giorgio Tsoukalos, our ancient aliens expert? He was on a Taco Bell commercial. He just popped up there. I couldn't believe it. And we have emerging artist bumper music tonight for the first couple hours. Later on tonight, Neil Donald Walsh joins us. Just what do you believe? And we just returned from Big Bear Lake, California, where we had the Alien Snowfest event. Great event. Lots of coast-to-coast insiders and listeners there and supporters who just love the genre of aliens. And we had a great time. Here's what's happening. With anxious families waiting nearby, rescuers pulled more survivors from the remains of a high-rise apartment building that collapsed a day earlier in a very powerful earthquake that shook southern Taiwan, killed at least 26 people. More than 100 remain buried in the building's rubble. They're trying desperately to get those people out. Somali intelligence officials say two airport workers handled a laptop that concealed a bomb that later exploded in a passenger plane. Now, that's the plane where a passenger got blown out of the side of the plane. In a video made public on Sunday by officials, one airport worker takes the laptop, hands it to another employee. The employees then handed over the man who committed suicide later on. He was killed when that laptop explosion blew a hole in the plane's fuselage. Both workers have been arrested. South Korea and Washington have agreed to begin talks about deploying a missile defense system in South Korea. This situation is going to get tense. This is all because North Korea defied international warnings and launched a long-range rocket that the United Nations and others call a cover for a banned test of technology for a missile that could strike the western coast of the United States. The rocket was fired from North Korea's west coast, and its path was tracked separately by the U.S., Japan, and South Korea. Let's check in with Jerry Corsi, who writes for WND.com. Jerry, this situation is going to get very tense, I'm afraid.
Very tense. The United Nations, I'm sure, is going to impose new sanctions against North Korea. And the missile that was used to put a satellite into space is really an intercontinental ballistic missile from North Korea that could carry a nuclear warhead and could deliver that as far as the western coast of the United States. So it's very frightening, it's very threatening, and North Korea, I think, is going to cause a worldwide reaction, especially coming 1 month after North Korea claims to have exploded and tested a hydrogen nuclear weapon.
Jerry, we are not, and I feel this, we are not going to permit North Korea to continue to move ahead with its missile technology, not when they have nukes.
I agree, George, it's just too dangerous. North Korea is unreliable. They're a very erratic country. They're a country that likes to threaten and almost act like a terrorist trying to get concessions from other countries. It's the same pattern. I mean, if we go back to the 1990s, 94, it was the agreed-upon framework that Bill Clinton put into place with former President Carter, mm-hmm. Jimmy Carter, and it was the same kind of deal we did with North Korea that we're doing now with Iran, when Carter and Clinton assured us in 1994 that North Korea would only use nuclear energy for peaceful purposes. And now it's clear North Korea has weapons, and I don't think the world's going to allow North Korea to have nuclear weapons if North Korea continues to be this defiant and belligerent. And I'm afraid Iran could follow the same path, using an agreement to be peaceful with nuclear energy and then developing nuclear weapons clandestinely, which I think is what Iran is going to do, just like North Korea did.
And a couple related topics I want to get your reaction on, Jerry. Of course, you wrote the book Black Gold Stranglehold and also Atomic Iran. And Iran apparently now wants to use euro payments for new and outstanding oil sales and get away from the U.S. dollar. That is going to be a problem.
It is, George. I've been writing about that for 10 years because Iran has been threatening to go off the dollar, to get away from the petrodollar. Now that we've given over like $100 billion back to Iran and released the sanctions, Iran's again being very belligerent on oil, and I think this will move the world away from the petrodollar, which is part of a move to not have the United States currency be the international currency settling international trade. If we're not the world's reserve currency, it's going to be an economic setback for all Americans and all those who are relying upon the dollar.
Jerry, and lastly, I'm being told by some sources in the Middle East that Russia, Iran, and Syria have encircled ISIS in Aleppo, Syria. Tragically, women and children are being killed and bombed as we speak, but that they've got these 40,000 ISIS members surrounded, and even though they've been talking about a ceasefire, they're going to go in and squeeze them. What do you hear?
I think it's the same. I think Russia especially is going to press the issue, trying to prop up Assad. Part of the good part will be a setback for ISIS, but it's going to be a very vicious setback, and there's going to be a lot of civilian casualties, and it's going to put Assad more firmly in power, with Russia exerting major force, including major air power, which is going to, again, establish Russia's position more firmly in the Middle East.
I think so. Jerry, thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of the Super Bowl night, if you would. Well, as I just mentioned, Iran wants to begin starting to use euro payments for new and outstanding oil sales. That could be a mess for our economy. We're going to check in with registered investment advisor Michael Mishchedlak now to get his weekly update on what's going on in the economic world this week. What do you think, Mish?
Hey, George, did you see the unemployment rate on Friday? That's the big news here in the U.S. The unemployment rate dropped to 4.9%. At least that's what they say.
That's what they say.
Do you really believe that?
I think there are more people unemployed. I think they've stopped looking for work.
That's what it is. And when you stop looking for work, you're not counted. I did a post on my blog on Friday, and I said, let's look at the group of people who should most be employed. Well, who is that? That's people 25 to 54, right? 25, you should be out of school. 54, you shouldn't be retired, right, George?
No.
So the compared right now, to 16 years ago, January 2000, we have 800,000 people less working in the age group 25 to 54 than we had 16 years ago. You might say, okay, well, what did the population do? Well, the population went up 5 million. So people have given up work. And so when they come out and they say the unemployment rate is 4.9%, you don't see it. I don't see it. I don't believe the average person on the street sees it, George.
Mish, check in with us with more data this week. You do a great job for us. Millions of people across Brazil have joined the first day of the annual carnival festivals, despite concerns about the outbreak of the Zika virus. And the president of Colombia, the country there, said that more than 3,100 pregnant women in the country are infected with mosquito-borne virus, which has been linked to birth defects and has no vaccine or treatment. Gary Ridenour, the expert on pandemics. Gary, we continue, though, to get mixed results and stories about whether it's the mosquito or not. What are you hearing?
Well, George, it's summer in 33 tropical nations right now that are now reporting in on the Zika virus. And the virus hasn't been to school, so we don't know much about it or how or which way they are reporting this virus. We know it's the Anopheles mosquito, and the Anopheles has been living in tropical areas for tens of thousands of years. So there's no reason for this mosquito to decide to move up here to Nevada.
Let's keep them away.
Well, exactly. It's not the kind of an environment. It's a perfect environment down there with poor sanitation.
Sure.
It's, I mean, they're tropical. And, you know, you've got already got vaccine companies who are already batting zero on vaccines on the latest viral outbreaks like Ebola. They're talking about making a vaccine for this.
Gary, John Rappaport was on my show last week, and he thinks this entire virus is being blown out of proportion.
I'm getting to the point where I'm calling it the newspaper virus.
So you agree with him?
Yeah, there's no solid research on this. CDC said it's in all human secretions. There's no research paper out on that.
All right, thanks, Gary. Couple sad stories to quickly report for you. One from the United Kingdom, the wife of Coast to Coast guest Colin Bennett, the brilliant writer on UFOs and anomalies, has passed away. A diabetic complication, and he died a very brave death, according to his wife. Sorry to see Colin Bennett leave us. And, of course, as the weekend was beginning, we heard word that our dear friend astronaut Edgar Mitchell, the sixth man to walk on the moon, died at the age of 85. He passed away at a hospice in West Palm Beach, Florida, one day before the 45th anniversary of his moon landing. We kind of suspected something was wrong with Edgar. He's been a dear friend of ours going way, way back since I interviewed him in St. Louis when he wrote the book, The Way of the Explorer. We wanted to get him on our Beyond Belief television program, and we just couldn't get him out there. And he told Tom, I just can't get there. I can't do it. And we suspected something could be wrong. Edgar Mitchell was part of that Apollo 14 mission in 1971. And I've got to tell you something. He was a champion for the possibility that this planet is being visited by extraterrestrial races. He told me many times, and once we've got a picture up on the Coast to Coast website at an event we were in Washington, D.C. with Edgar Mitchell. I was having dinner with him. And he said, George, I've got to be honest with you. I always have been. When I was on the moon, I did not see anything unusual. No extraterrestrials. I didn't see any craft. But I'm going to tell you this. I have talked to members of government, people in high technology positions, people in government, and they tell me we have been and we are currently being visited from beings from other planetary systems. When he told me that, I said to everybody, take it to the bank. Edgar Mitchell does not lie. And we've lost a great man, dead at the age of 85, Edgar Mitchell. Up next, it's called Joyfully Shattered. What does that mean? Well, that's a cross between science and spirituality. And Dr. Rick Sheff is next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you tonight. Dr. Rick Sheff is a family physician, more than 30 years of experience in medicine. He now serves as a principal and chief medical officer of the Greeley Company. That's a healthcare solutions company. He has consulted, authored, lectured on a wide range of healthcare management and leadership issues, including patient safety, physician performance as well. And we're going to be talking with him about his new work called Joyfully Shattered, but you have to listen to the subtitle, A Physician's Awakening at the Crossroads of Science and Spirituality. And Dr. Rick, that tells me everything. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, George. Pleasure to be with you.
Tell me a little bit about this title, Joyfully Shattered. I find that fascinating.
Well, it begins with a couple of pieces. One is a recognition that all of us function in our worlds with what we'll call a web of belief. This is a term coined by Willard Van Orman Quine, a Harvard philosopher. And think of it as the way all of the things you think about the world come as true, come together in sort of a mutually reinforcing network of beliefs and knowledge claims. And we all have one. We live in one that's a personal web of belief, and as a scientist, I'm aware that scientists working in a particular field have a shared web of belief. And so what happens is when we encounter something that doesn't fit our web of belief, we have three choices. We can not even see it as data.
Mm-hmm.
It's coincidence. It's a measurement problem.
And I don't believe in coincidence, but we'll get into that later.
Right. Second, we can say, well, it's data, but it's not going to change anything about my web of belief. It doesn't tell me the world is any different, even though that's a, call it an anomalous piece of data. It hangs out on the web somewhere. And third, it can migrate closer and closer to the core of the web. And as more and more data points accumulate that don't fit your web of belief, if you're a good, in my case, a good scientist, if you believe in the integrity of your beliefs, it's going to force them to change, and in my case, shattered it. Because I was raised in a family I described as passionately atheist. And I knew that to be the truth into my 20s. And then I've had a series of experiences since then that do not fit that web of belief. And I've learned that the world does not work as I was taught, either at my parents' knee or in my science classes. And after 40 years of that process of being exposed to and recognizing these data points, it's not only forced a change in my web of belief, it's shattered it. And the result has been more joy than I ever knew possible.
Was it a difficult, long journey for you?
When you say difficult, as any of us, when we have a web of belief, things we believe to be true, and we encounter something that doesn't fit it, we resist change. That's sure. Natural human nature. And so I certainly had that, and I had my version of that's coincidence, that's not data. But over time, if you do this with integrity, it forces you to stretch. That can be uncomfortable, to release beliefs you knew to be true, but now you know just are untenable. And that can be uncomfortable. But probably the deepest piece is what really helps us grow is pain. It's when things don't go well in our lives, when we experience the breakup of a relationship, an illness for yourself or a loved one, mm-hmm. the death of a loved one. And when that happens, that is an opportunity to use that pain to open, to grow, or to shut down. And if we choose it to open and grow, the human heart grows by breaking. And it deepens us, and it's a way to use pain to become, call it, a better person, a more loving person. And that really is part of the spiritual journey for just about everyone I've ever known who's been on such a journey.
Dr. Scheff, was your family, were they opposed to all of this? Because they were, you know, they came up from that background of being atheists, as you mentioned. Did they fight your beliefs?
It's a funny process because I've recently visited my parents. They are both alive, 90 and 89.
Oh, that's great.
My 90-year-old father, and I said, Dad, you know, I've written this book, and I referred to our family as passionately atheist. And he looked at me and said, yeah, still am. So he's fully in that mode. And he looks at me and does not know what to make of this. And at one point he goes, where did we go wrong?
They lost you.
Yes.
Well, by coming over to this side, the side of belief, I'll call it, has that changed your life, your newer life?
Very much so. And when you say the side of belief, I want to touch on that for a moment because I haven't left science behind.
No.
And I think good science is teaching us increasingly that what we call spiritual is actually the truth, provided we do science well, and I hope we get to that.
We will.
Yes, when you come over to this, it has transformed my life. In fact, part of the journey, and I write about this in the book Joyfully Shattered, is just a couple of years ago, I professed vows as a monk.
Really?
Yes, in the Spirit of Peace monastic community. And the title of that chapter is Dr. Rick? And the subtitle is, I Didn't See This One Coming. and what I was drawn to, and what actually pulled me in that direction, is that this monastic community, the primary commitment is to pray for the world 2 hours a day.
Well, that helps. We need them. We need a lot of people to do that the way things are going, Rick.
Yes, we do.
Okay, stay with us. We're going to take this quick break, then we're going to come right back and chat more with you about Joyfully Shattered. And, of course, in our last hour, we'll open up the phone lines to give you an opportunity to interact with our special guest. And welcome back to Coast AM. Hey, get the latest updates and the highlights from the show by signing up for our free daily newsletter. It's called Coast Zone. Simply scroll down to the bottom of our website page at coasttocoastam.com. On the right side, click the link for Coast Zone. And again, it's free. You simply sign up for it, and it's delivered right to your computer. So enjoy that. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Rick Sheff with us. We're talking about his book, Joyfully Shattered, and shattered indeed. Rick, a lot of people take things as faith because there's no science behind it. They can't prove it at this point. Was that difficult for you too?
Well, I think the question of what has to be a matter of faith and what can be a matter of science is a very important and challenging line to draw. And I'm still a scientist. And here's what I'm finding. Science done well is increasingly proving the truth of what today we call spiritual. So whether or not, you know, scientific materialism is the dominant paradigm today. It has to be material. And I think we're finding things about thoughts, intentions, prayer, consciousness that have an impact on our material world. And good science is increasingly teaching us that that is the case. I think there's a different question that says, can science answer the question of the existence and nature of God or the divine or source or spirit, any word one would use to describe the ultimate? And where I've come to as a scientist is even the concept of what we consider God, I believe, probably functions beyond what human rational logic and thought and science can address. So I believe there's an area that's increasingly going to be an integration of science and spirituality, science done well, and then there'll be an area that remains the subjective, the inner experience, the area of faith. And I think that line will move over time, but I'm not sure that science will ever be able to cross that line. And there will be issues that will remain faith and belief and experience. And that's what the mystics have taught us for years. And I've had my own experiences of that can best be described as mystical. And I talk about those in the book. And the book is filled with stories. The book is really written for other people to be able to, in essence, follow this path as breadcrumbs for themselves on their own path. Because I find many people, in fact, most of us really are on this path of trying to pursue, how do I live a good life? What is true about the world? How do I expand as a person? And how do I walk, in essence, a spiritual path well? And that's really who the book is written for.
I hosted an event this weekend, Rick, in Big Bear Lake, California, a couple hours outside of Los Angeles. And I asked the panelists each this question, and that was, if you were in a room with an extraterrestrial, what one question would you ask them? And all the panelists came up with great questions on, you know, where did you come from? Why do you come here? And questions like that. When it came back to me, as I was wrapping up that panel, I told the crowd, the audience, that my question would have been, do you believe in God? And they all stood up and cheered and they went wild with that. Because that's an interesting question. The belief system universally on just what is God? Are we ever going to get that answer?
I don't think science is going to answer that question.
No.
I do believe there is a pursuit over time. And here's what I have found, because the path I've been on and the stories I tell in the book are about my explorations that brought me to those kinds of questions, and they took me to Oneness University in India and John of God in Brazil and Medjugorje, the site of Mary for more than 30 years. And in each case, I found something that one of my teachers, Ron Roth, one of my most important teachers, one of the two people I dedicate the book to, taught it this way. He said, there's only one religion, the religion of love. Hmm. And by that he meant, at their origin, all of the great world's religions, their founding teachers, were teaching the same message, that the essence of whatever we call the ultimate, God, divine, source, spirit, the essence of that is love, and the essence of who we are is love. And what I've found is, you know, if you go on a spiritual path and you take it seriously, you'll find there's a lot of weird stuff out there in the spiritual movement and the New Age movement. And what we need to maintain is a sense of discernment. And what I find is the most helpful part of that sense of discernment is that if it's not about love, it's not part of this path. It's not part of what I think ultimately would become to known as the truth. So I celebrate all the great world religions. I think as long as they come to that fundamental, from that fundamental place, then I think there are many paths to call it God, call it enlightenment, call it awakening, call it the truth, and they can be celebrated. But if someone says, I've got the one and only path, that's where I begin to have my concerns, because God, spirit, the ultimate, is bigger than any one religion or organization can possibly encompass.
Well, in that belief system of I've got the only way has created, as we see on this planet, all kinds of problems. Why is this planet, in your opinion, Doctor, why is it so hateful? I mean, if I were on another planet looking down at this one, I'd go, either let's just blow the whole thing up or have nothing to do with it, because those inhabitants, there's something wrong with them.
That's a very profound question. In fact, on my website, I have a blog, and I've just started a series of blog entries on the topic of spirituality and terrorism, because I think it's important for us to explore, if we want to be loving people, if we want to pursue a spiritual path, and this is part of what other people are doing on this planet, how do we respond as a loving, caring, call it spiritual, being? And if anyone wants to go to the website, it's www.rickscheffmd.com.
And we've got a link for you, too.
That's great. And by the way, it's S-H-E-F-F, no C. When I married my wife,
right,
I said, you're going to spend the rest of your life saying that, Chef, S-H-E-F-F, no C. And now she said, after 20 years, she said, you're absolutely right. So I think the challenge here is that it is multifold. Actually, has got multiple pieces.
I mean, would you visit this planet if you were coming from another planet, seeing what's going on here?
I think part of what's happening, and again, I explore this in the book, in the stories, because I have had experiences that have taught me that I believe reincarnation is the way the world works. And that can be a belief, but I think science is increasingly showing us, we have good data, that is more likely the case than not. And I think over time we'll get better and better data. And that takes me to a place that says, if we do reincarnate many, many times, then why do we come here? And the answer is to grow, to open our hearts. And this is a place where it's really hard to do that. But if we do it, our soul's growth, our spiritual growth, our heart expands. And that is the challenge of a life on Earth, to come to a place that has violence and hate and pain and suffering, and still use this life that we've been gifted as a journey of opening the heart. And that's really one of the messages I want from this book to get out to everyone, because we all suffer. We all have pain.
Sure.
We all feel hurt.
We're humans.
And we could shut down from that, or we can open from it. And that's what I hope people receive.
Dr. Scheff, what has been for you, as you wrote this book, the most profound story that you came across?
Well, there are a number of them in the book, but the most profound story for me has been very personal. And it's been the journey I've taken with my younger son.
Can you share that?
So, and I do share this in the book, mm-hmm. Because it's for many parents, it's a universal journey for us. But my son suffered, and it began early with night terrors. My first marriage ended in divorce, and coming out of that, he developed tantrums that were nightly, that were just unconsolable. 45 minutes to 2 hours of raging.
How old was he?
He was 5, 6 when we separated. And those tantrums continued for years and were heartbreaking. And I'm a physician. I'm a family physician. I'm trained to deal with people and families, and I could not help him. And we did therapy, we did everything we could, and then in his teens, he became suicidal, and at one point in our relationship, there was a rupture, and he didn't want to have me in his life, and this is what brought me to my knees. This is what taught me to pray. And again, I share that story in the book, and I when I went to Oneness University, it was with prayers for my son's healing. When I went to John of God in Brazil, it was with prayers for my son's healing. And this was where I experienced what today I hold to be a miracle.
When you saw John of God, by the way, who has an incredible record for healing people, what did you think?
I write those stories in the book. There's a whole chapter on John of God. And I have been to Brazil to see John of God 8 times, and I have seen him in the United States and Canada 9 times, and had the honor to serve in what they call the current rooms there. And as a scientist and a skeptic, I can tell you I encountered experiences, data points that exploded my web of belief that cannot be reduced to our current paradigm today. And that taught me there is far more to this world. It is far more wondrous and mysterious than most of today's scientists are telling us. And so you ask the most profound story. So to bring it to its closure, at the end of my first visit to see John of God in Brazil, I got to the airport in Rio de Janeiro, and my cell phone went off. And my most impassioned prayers were for my son's healing. And I heard that he was now in crisis, could not be left alone. And it was nothing I could do from there, but I said to my ex-wife, please keep our son safe, and I will pray for him, which is all I could do from there.
Oh, my God, yeah. And you were probably expecting anything could happen.
Exactly. And when I started to pray, I got this sense that this was the beginning of his healing. This was an answer to my prayers. And I tell this story in the book because 5 days later, he accepted our signing him up for a wilderness program, and he went. And 3 weeks later, I'm climbing up to his campsite in the high desert, and I have my son back. Huh. And to me, that is a miracle.
And how is he now?
And now he's healthy. Young man, he has the ups and downs of a young man, but he is in life, he's engaged, and it's been a joy.
Might he be listening to you right now?
He might be. By the way, well, let's be clear, he doesn't think it had anything to do with my visit to John of God. And I have room for people to have different approaches to that. I'm still a scientist, and I can see how you would not see that as data.
No, but you do. That's all that matters on your end.
Yes.
When we talked about science, and you said science will probably not be able to prove the existence of God, can it get close?
I think it can point us in directions to there is something beyond this. And I think when we get to the edge of what we can know, and the theory of general relativity gives us this cone of space-time that we can know, and there's a boundary beyond that. I believe as we approach that, we will begin to engage, and I think this is very important. It's important mathematically and scientifically as well as spiritually to engage the concept, the principle of infinity, because if there is a God, it's got to connect with that. And how do we have something that is beyond space and time? And I think consciousness can get us there. And in fact, that is what consciousness is about. It is not limited by space and time, and the great teachers of all the great spiritual traditions have taught us that. And again, in the book, I share stories of touching that kind of consciousness that is that expanded, that is the experience that mystics have been telling us about for millennia. And I think that is getting us as close as we can get to the essence of God.
You know, I know in my heart that this is not a fluke of nature, that there's got to be something behind this. I don't know what it is, Rick. I don't. You know, I'm like you, searching for answers. I've been looking for these answers all my life. I think one of the reasons I do this program is to try to get answers for myself. But I know this is not just a fluke. You know, as scientists will simply say that, you know, life started this way, this little organism became this and that. And that may be all true in terms of the progression of biology, but there's more to it than that. I mean, the mere fact I'm here interviewing you, and then, you know, we go home or we get in our cars, and there's something else going on here. I just don't know what it is, but it's much bigger than what I think all of us think.
And that is the conclusion I've come to. And actually, the opening paragraph of Joyfully Shattered opens with, "I am a scientist and a skeptic. I have studied philosophy at Oxford, the sciences at Ivy League universities, and medicine at the oldest medical school in America. I have deeply questioned all that we think we know and how we think we know it. After 40 years in the ardent pursuit of truth, I've come to the conclusion the world is a far more wondrous and mysterious place than most of today's scientists are telling us."
That is so eloquently put. It's perfect. It's perfect. Do you ever stop sometimes when you're by yourself outside, look at the stars, and this wonderment just hits you? It's a feeling that is so awe-inspiring, I cannot describe it.
I agree with you. And that is what we, our consciousness, can encompass, how vast the universe is. And even our universe is likely not the limit of all that is. There's a universe of universes, the scientists are starting to tell us, and even beyond that, what exists. And I think that we can and should follow science. I'm a strong believer in science done well. But can I also share, there's a way to do science not well. And the term for that, and I talk about this in the book, the term for that is scientism.
Scientism like
can be characterized as the use of the trappings of science in defense of dogma. And that is not science done well. But that's what we do when we resist paradigm changes. And I, again, I talk about that in the book. Thomas Kuhn, who gave us the term paradigm as we use it today in his book, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions, talks about the resistance to paradigm shifts, but that paradigm shifts are an absolutely normal part of science done well. And yet scientists resist them. But then when enough data points accumulate that say the old model, in our case, the model of scientific materialism, is not up to explaining the data we have today from many, many different sources, then it's time for a new model. And Kuhn describes that as entering a transition from normal science, when scientists are working within a shared paradigm, to a period of revolutionary science, when the very work of being a scientist is to cast about for the new model. And that's part of what's exciting is this. I think we've entered a period of revolutionary science when we are now in the early stages of casting about for the new model that will integrate science and spirituality. And that's science done well, not scientism.
Exciting. We're with Dr. Rick Sheff, author of Joyfully Shattered. And we're going to come back at the top of the hour. We're going to take your phone calls as we talk about something that is just so profound. And that is the search for that inner being within yourself, whether you believe or not. And then we'll talk with him about this new paradigm that he feels is coming. Here's our next emerging artist, Stephen Jacobs. The song is called Cat's Paw, from our neighborhood in Los Angeles, California.